Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. Thanks for joining us. We have a wonderful guest this evening, Amanda Curtis. And just to be clear about this is not our own local Amanda Curtis, who is fairly famous in Butte. This particular guest, Amanda Curtis, is the co-founder and CEO of Enabled and 19th Amendment. In just a moment, she will be with us and tell us all about what she is up to. Remember that you can find us on Facebook. You can also reach out and email us if you would like at heartstockradio@gmail.com. We are always looking for wonderful entrepreneurs and guests who are using business as a force for good. This is Heartstock. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. This is Heartstock Radio, and our guest today is Amanda Curtis. She's a co-founder and CEO of Enabled and 19th Amendment. Hi, Amanda Curtis. How are you?
I'm doing well, Carol. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to warn you earlier. I had called a little earlier today that your name is going to spark all kinds of who, what, here locally. But to be very specific, your endeavor has been growing exponentially, as best I can tell, over the course of several years due to you and your co-founder's efforts. Can you please tell our listeners what exactly is Enabled and the 19th Amendment?
Yeah, definitely. And just to clear the air a little bit, I have a company that is politically charged in name, but we're not in politics at all. So Enabled is a platform for quick turn production management that allows fashion brands of any size to operate transparently, ethically, and sustainably in both environmental and financial ways. So what we do is we combine this technology with a network of tech-enabled U.S. manufacturers all across America to make no minimum quick turn production possible. And this allows fashion brands to sell products with either limited inventory or no inventory at all, which really reduces cash flow burden and inventory risk and really helps their sustainable emissions. So that's Enabled. And Enabled is actually the technology that powers our marketplace, which is called 19th Amendment. And 19th Amendment is a marketplace where you can shop independent fashion brands from all over the world. The thing that unites them is that there's actually no inventory held on 19th Amendment. All purchases are made on demand in the USA through the Enabled platform. So it's a great way to discover amazing new brands and support USA manufacturing while also really getting a clue into new fashion. So that's kind of a brief overview, and I'm sure we'll go into it in more depth.
Yes, so I think that for our non-fashion listeners who probably would love to learn more about, you know, why this is so important and why the significant impact that it has on the fashion industry, maybe we should back up just a little bit and talk about, yeah, why this is important and how fashion and designing clothes, and when we go out and buy clothes, we don't necessarily know the whole entire process that has gone into it and why it needs to change and be upgraded.
Absolutely. And I think this is a key point that a lot of retailers and brands are clueing into, because consumers are really demanding transparency in this otherwise very veiled process. So to give listeners a little bit of insight into sustainability in the fashion space, the fashion industry is actually the second most polluting industry in the world, right after oil. And that has a lot to do with just the way things are manufactured. Fast fashion, which is that really cheap fashion that hits the stores and the prices are a little bit too unbelievable, is all due to overproduction of goods, and that overproduction of goods results in so much dead stock, so much wasted materials, not to mention like the carbon footprint of the fashion industry if products are made overseas and then shipped to the U.S. So what we're really trying to do through Enabled is give brands a way to produce locally to the end consumer, which for a lot of brands, that means producing locally in the U.S., and only make what consumers actually want to purchase. So eliminating that need for massive inventory and the need to, you know, reduce prices so much that they have to place so many orders. So we really kind of flipped that traditional business model on its head. And the only way we've been able to do that is through this technology that connects brands directly with vetted manufacturers who can do really quick turnarounds and who are committed to doing things sustainably and who can ship directly to the end consumer. So it's kind of a rethinking of the traditional fashion space. And I think in 2020, now definitely is the time to do that from both an environmental standpoint, but also a business standpoint as well.
And the thing that I love about it is it's eliminating the guesswork. So much of the current paradigm depends upon guessing, everybody guessing, the designer guessing how many to make, the retailer guessing how many people will actually be willing to buy. And it leads to a huge amount of waste. So I know that you grew up in the fashion industry, is that right?
I did. My aunt was vice president of a bridal company. I watched her take global, and they had manufacturers in the U.S. They had retail stores all over the U.S., eventually in Japan and other places. And I really watched that grow from the ground up. So fashion is completely in my DNA.
So growing up as a young girl, I know for me, it just seemed like even I did not grow up in the fashion industry, but I was drawn to textiles and clothing and all of that. Was that the case for you, or was it really something that it's more because you were immersed in it growing up?
So I have a background in a design sense. So I knew I was going to be a fashion designer, and I actually did my graduate work at Parsons. So I was always drawn to that side of it, but I was definitely exposed to everything from the retail side to the manufacturing side, to the design side. It was enamoring. I think the piece that was missing for me was the technology piece, because I was growing up in the 90s and the early 2000s, really seeing a lack of technology. And meanwhile, at home, my father is actually a software engineer. So I'm watching him build up these networks and connect people, and things are happening so quick, and he's talking to countries all over the world and really bringing a lot of efficiencies to his industry. It was just totally different. And I just saw a complete disconnect from these two worlds that I was experiencing simultaneously. And I saw an opportunity even at that young age to, you know, combine them to really make the space a whole lot better.
So walk us through your process. At what point did you realize, hey, we can do this differently? And how did you end up designing your platforms?
Sure. So I think the best way to do this is to actually talk a little bit about how the idea came up to begin with. So I was working as a designer. I was actually running a brand. And I was going through the process and seeing just how backwards it was. It was a lot of guesswork, trying to work with the manufacturers, trying to figure out what minimums were before I even knew consumers wanted to purchase pieces. And I had spent a lot of money. I had success in a PR newsworthy way. I was going to fashion week, but bottom line, I think business isn't making business well. It's not quite one. So decided, let's look at kind of the tech industry and how tech startups are really just launching products in front of consumers without there really being much there. Like, they might call them MVP, or so minimal viable product, putting that in front of consumers, seeing if people actually want to purchase. Decided there wasn't a way to do that in the fashion space, except for there needs to be created a way to do that. And that's really where we started, taking some of the sample pieces that I was actually making and putting that in front of potential consumers and saying, purchase it. We'll make it on demand for you. And this was in 2013. So it was a fairly new concept. But what we discovered is that if you connect consumers and they're transparent and open and honest and upfront with them about where their garment is, the manufacturing process, even though they're waiting for it, you create a fashion experience and you also create a new business model. So that was one part of the puzzle that we had to figure out is, hey, does this actually work on as like a retail model? And two, now we have to figure out how to actually get these pieces made. Are manufacturers going to go against their traditional way of operating, which in the fashion space is typically scheduling out 6 to 12 months in advance, fitting brands into a calendar and then releasing products a season ahead of time. So we're really going against the tide in two different ways, but ultimately what we're able to do is through the technology that we built it also for these small domestic manufacturers who were really operating on, at best, email. So what we did is we built them a platform where they can see the orders coming in, they have vetted brands to work with, and we've really made their entire process incredibly efficient. And in doing so, they agreed to doing things that are counterintuitive to their business. So they agreed to just do that quick-term production in about 3 weeks. They agreed to take in orders that were much, much smaller, sometimes one piece at a time. And it's transformed their business because the way that they were operating before, it was risky, it was costly. And what we were doing is giving them a funnel of constant orders throughout the year. So it ended up working on both sides, but it took a lot of experimentation and a lot of kind of seeing where things might be heading in the fashion and retail space, you know, looking at consumer behavior and also just how the internet was going to potentially affect, you know, the physical retail space, which we're seeing now.
So there's essentially two platforms. One is for the fashion designer and the other is for the consumer. Is that right?
Yeah, so 19th Amendment is for the consumers, and then Enabled is for fashion designers. It will say that Enabled can be used to power any fashion designer's front-end e-commerce site. So basically, they can choose to use 19th Amendment, which is really us just proving out a use case that we could go and say, hey, this actually works. Here's the proof brands are actually using it. But Enabled is really kind of that real technology platform that makes it all possible.
Mm-hmm. We're at that halfway point, so we're going to take a quick break. In just a moment, we will be right back with Amanda Curtis. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy, and our guest today is Amanda Curtis. Hi again, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you. Amanda was just sharing with us a little bit about her platform, her digital platform called Enabled in the 19th Amendment. How did you come up with the name 19th Amendment?
Yeah, the 19th Amendment was women's suffrage. Gave everyone a voice in the democratic process. And when we looked at the fashion industry, there's a lot of dictatorship. So our goal through 19th Amendment and Enabled, which came from 19th Amendment, was to give everyone a voice in the fashion industry, from consumers who would like to discover new brands to designers to manufacturers.
Yeah, and that kind of leads to our next question about who are your users and customers? Who are your sites designed for?
So So we work with brands from, you know, the very beginning stages all the way through to massive brands like Disney, Project Runway, Macy's. What I think is really unique about our platform is that you don't have to be a trained designer to use it. And in that way, we're really democratizing the way that, you know, people create brands and products. So we have a lot of people come to us with an idea for a product or say, I always wanted to create a fashion collection. And our platform is just very easy to use so that people can go on, talk to a manufacturer directly, communicate their concept, and actually get products made in a matter of weeks. Just like we're working with Project Runway right now and making some of their pieces shoppable so people can watch the show and actually purchase the pieces in the same way. And I think that's really, truly innovative and a game changer in the fashion industry.
Walk us through your startup history. How were you funded and what was the big break that made it all happen?
Probably a lot of little breaks that made it all happen. So we, my co-founder and I, Jenna Soul, she's the left brain to my right brain in many ways.
Say her name one more time for us.
It's Jenna Soul.
Jenna Soul. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
We are funded for venture backed, so when you look at the amount that we've raised to date, it's significantly less than the traction that we have. And so we like to call this stiletto strapping. So we definitely practice what we preach to brands about doing less with more. And I think as far as, you know, there's not one moment where I can say, hey, this is where we actually made it. There's so many little moments from, you know, that first user to launching the platform and then getting Macy's to work with us 6 months out of the gate, and then Disney and then Project Runway. But I think the unifying factor is that we're still making those little moments and still going along. But it's really amazing to see just, you know, what kind of impact that we're having in the space and what change is happening over time. Because to me, that's the most gratifying thing, is to hear from brands who are actually successful now and to talk to larger brands who are coming to us looking for a better way to operate and do things, and for manufacturers who are really thriving, whereas in a different kind of operational system, they might not be.
And how do you find the manufacturers who are willing to work within this new paradigm?
So our first level of vetting is we actually look to brands to recommend manufacturers to work with. And then we go in, we have a strict code of ethics that we adhere to. We go through test runs with our manufacturers. We actually give them our technology for free because we want them to be successful. A lot of them are women-owned businesses and they just need a better operational platform or technology to work with. So it's a lot of us just identifying, you know, who is a good partner, what do they stand for, and then seeing obviously like their capabilities, their turnaround, and all those technical things that we need to communicate to brands.
And from the designer standpoint, what is the process? Like if I'm a budding designer or a big brand, is it the same process for both? And what is that process like?
Yeah, it's a fairly similar process depending on, you know, where the brand is in their product development journey. So brands can come up to us with some inspiration or a sketch, and we can work with them there and connect them with the right sample makers to bring those ideas to life. Or a brand can come to us further down that life cycle with a product already created. And at that point, what they're doing is they're actually digitizing that product in our system. We've built what's called a PLM, so it's a production lifecycle management system, where all of the technical specifications for making a garment, kind of like the IQ instructions for making a garment, are digitized. And then they're sent out to our network of manufacturers who then bid on it. A brand can then decide who the best fit is. It could be price, time of year, location, et cetera. And once they select that manufacturer to work with, it triggers the manufacturing process, which also happens on our platform. All communication happens in one space in real time. If a brand chooses to do a pre-sale where the customer is actually looking at this process and their piece getting made, they get those updates too. So it becomes really transparent and a true experience. And then at the end of that entire manufacturing process, which depending on the product can take around 3 to 4 weeks. The brand is then fed data back so that they can understand what their manufacturing looks like, what their cost breakdown looks like, timeline, et cetera, so that when they go forward, they can do things in a smarter fashion.
And from the consumer standpoint, can you kind of walk us through that same process?
Sure. So on 19th Amendment, if a consumer were to purchase a garment from one of our brands using Enabled, they would place an order. It's a pre-order, so the product is actually not made at all. It then triggers the manufacturing process. So you as the shopper would get notifications saying, my dress is being made, and this is the person making it, and this is where they're making it, and it's being cut, sewn, et cetera. And over that time, you really get to know the journey of your piece. So at the end of the day, you don't just have another garment that everyone else has. You have truly a piece of fashion history that you know the history of, and it's in your closet, and it was made ethically and sustainably.
Mm-hmm. You know, I asked a little bit earlier about this, but I'm just wondering if we can delve into it a little bit more as far as how are you able to fund all that you've accomplished?
Yes, we're pretty transparent. We've raised just over $500,000 to date for a technology company that's really, really, really scrappy. So all of our money really goes back into building out this technology. And a lot of it has just been, you know, partnerships and saying, hey, we have a different way to do things, and here's a better way. Let's test it out. Here are some case studies. So it's a lot of just scrappiness and willingness to... hate to be clipping, but make it work. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's a true need for what we're doing. And we're at the point now where we've made it work so many times that now brands and shoppers are coming to us. And I think that's true validation for, you know, market fit and also timing being right.
Mm-hmm. So close to $500,000, was that from different investors or from one investor?
It's from different investors. We have institutional VCs, and then we also have professional angel investors. So, you know, my co-founder and I, both female in the tech space, we're very proud to have these investors on our team.
Yeah. As we've talked about on the show previously, very, very small amount or percentage of the total VC dollars actually go to women-led companies. So congratulations. That's a huge, huge accomplishment.
Thank you. We definitely have to get that bar up for sure.
Yeah, we're working on it, you know, just by being out there and, you know, doing what you're doing is awesome. And I think that helps a lot. What are the biggest challenges that you have currently?
I think the biggest challenges we have are just, you know, more exposure. Again, we're still very much a startup and we're trying to educate people and brands and consumers about what we're doing, and we don't have millions and millions of dollars. So it's really about getting the word out, and I think that's our biggest challenge. We've built out the tech, we've built out the process, so we're just at the point where we're scaling, which is super exciting.
Mm-hmm. And can you share with us a little bit about, you know, what is your growth rate? You know, do you see it increasing over time? Is it kind of leveled off?
Oh, no, it's definitely increasing month over month, which is really wonderful. And we do have a very public partnership with Project Runway right now. So we are getting some really great organic kind of exposure from people who are just interested in what we're doing. So we're very excited for what 2020 will bring.
Indeedy. Alrighty. And how about the future? What should we watch for? Anything coming up that you can share with us?
Well, there's more in Project Runway that will be coming up this season if anyone's interested. And for us, I just think like taking a temperature of the retail space, I think it's a really fascinating time to see what brands and retailers are doing. And I think it's also a fascinating time for consumers to be a part of that. So as anyone who's listening, you are a consumer, you have the power to actually influence an entire industry and be a positive change. So I really encourage everyone to be a part of the conversation and to really act upon it as much as you can. And vote with your dollars.
You know, for me, it really is a new age of conscious consumerism, which is very exciting and refreshing for me personally. I find it just, the best is yet to come.
So, yeah, it's empowering.
Yes. How might listeners find you if they'd like to learn more or carry on the conversation?
Sure, absolutely. So our marketplace is 19thAmendment.com, and it's actually spelled out. And then enabled is spelled N-A-B-L-D, and that comes from 19th Amendment. And that's .com as well. And that's really for brands who are just interested in getting started. But I'm pretty accessible. My name is Amanda Curtis, and my email is just Amanda at either 19thAmendment.com or Amanda at enable.com. So I'm really interested in hearing feedback. And obviously, if we can help in any way, we're happy to do so.
Thank you, Amanda, so much for being our guest on Heartstock and sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Carol, for having me.
Mm-hmm. This is Heartstock Radio, and we shall be back next week. See you then. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via livestream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.